You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider, joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter, at EastSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter, at BrendanKleen14. We're joining it right after the Suns lost on a Sunday afternoon game against the Atlanta Hawks, this time in Atlanta, 113-112. And I know me and Brendan were both wondering about the lottery implications there at the very end, as that loss firmly entrenches the Suns at the number two spot at the moment. They're currently have a tiebreaker at Memphis as far as that goes, because they beat the Grizzlies. So the Grizzlies set number one, the Suns set number two, but they have, I think, a game lead over everyone else for number two pick. So I guess we'll recap that as well and talk about, as usual, the box scores from tonight's game. So Brendan, let's start off with you. What was your biggest takeaway from this game?
It has to be TJ Warren, I think. Fun to see him come alive. We haven't seen a night like this from him in a while, and it felt good to see, because, I mean, we've been talking a lot about Josh Jackson versus TJ Warren and, you know, who maybe fit is better or who's been more effective, and kind of comparing those two. And it was nice to see TJ kind of come out and remind us all what makes him so special too, you know?
Oh, for sure. He finished with 35 points, 4 rebounds, very efficient night from TJ. I think that's now his third occurrence of 35 points or more this season, which I didn't expect at all coming into this season. And he's really, it's the first time I mentioned in probably about a month or so, but he filled in partly for Devin Booker when he went cold, and that's how it was earlier in the season. So like you mentioned, it was pretty good to see Warren bounce back to his usual self after a slump for a couple weeks there.
Was it more surprising to have him score 35 or for him to take threes?
Yeah, that's the thing. We talked about before, but I think over the last few games I've noticed it a lot. Have you noticed that he's just taken a lot more threes?
Yeah, it's been a trend really since I would say middle of January. And, you know, still kind of not going in, but as we've said all year, he just needs to be taking them. So 1 of 4 is fine. I care much more about the 4 than the 1, and I think that's a much better indicator going forward than how many he's making. It's just that he's back comfortable even launching those when he's open, and, you know, we see it all the time. He's open plenty. There was one time in the, like, late in the second quarter, got a kick out in transition, and anyone else, it would have been an open three kind of before the defense could get set. And he was standing on the three-point line, dribbled a couple times, drove in, and hit like a super contested layup. It was about the most TJ Warren play you'll ever see. But less of those is going to be good if he can keep up those three-point attempts.
Yeah, I think going forward, I would actually love to see. What's your thoughts on Josh Jackson, Warren, and Booker together out there? Because I feel like we've been seeing it a lot more the last couple weeks. And what's your feelings on possibly them staggering the minutes to where TJ and Josh and Booker are playing at least like 20, 25 minutes together? Because it seems like they did that tonight.
To me, it kind of is back to what we were talking about a lot around the first of the year when there was the debate about Booker starting at point guard. And I, at that point, said that, you know, it made the most sense to me because Troy Daniels was playing better than most of the other guys on the team. So having those two on the court together as much as possible is just going to be the best call. And I think that's where we're at now with Warren, Booker, and Jackson. Is those are just the three best players on the team, and those are the three guys who need to be on the court the most, and that just means they're all going to play together a lot. And obviously a byproduct of that is we need to see how three fit, if they're going to be able to survive together. But I hope it continues that way.
Totally. I really hope to see TJ continue this, because it seemed like I mentioned, he hit a little mini slump there, but he definitely bounced back today in Atlanta, albeit in a loss. But speaking of a guy who's really gained chemistry with TJ since his acquisition, is Elfrid Payton. He had his second triple-double, his fifth double-double in 9 games so far. He continues to stuff the stat sheet, and once again today he had 11 points, 10 rebounds, 14 assists. I think he had 12 assists in the first 18 minutes, so he was really feeding TJ, and him got a really good chemistry going so far. So just what's your thoughts on Payton's performance? And he continues to really look like one of the best point guards as far as from playmaking perspective the Suns have had in a very long time.
Yeah, agreed. And I think to kind of continue to track his defense, not an efficient night would maybe be the other thing to mention from him, but We're seeing that his aggressiveness sometimes means that he's not as efficient as he could be. I talked about it against the Thunder. He was taking a lot of mid-range jumpers. That is a part of his game we're seeing, and those shots just don't go in as much as layups and open, you know, three-pointers can. And so it's not going to look nice, but to track his defense, I think, too, which was a struggle against Westbrook, Schroeder was a much better matchup for him, just much less explosive and athletic, and Peyton was able to kind of keep up a little bit better. I was actually surprised with, I thought, you know, I remember Schroeder going off in the first game. I don't know if that's actually true, but let's see, I have it right here. He scored 20 in the first game, so I guess about the same as last time, but he scares me just because the Suns have had such a struggle, and I thought that was one aspect where they kind of did keep him in control for the most part.
What's your thoughts on Peyton's assertiveness, or albeit energy, puts on defense? It seems like that wanes between possessions. Sometimes he's super into it defensively and it looks very good, but sometimes he just looks like he's loafing around and the guy just blows right by him.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a big problem with a lot of players on this team, so it's difficult for me to pinpoint why or how that happens. He has definitely not been a solution to that problem, and I do think that it's honestly, to me, it looks, just watching those two guys, it looks similar to Booker to me in a lot of situations, like you're saying, with the blow-bys and just kind of losing ground on defense. And people talk all the time, like, you know, I've heard offense is about spacing, defense is about positioning, and that's probably one of the biggest problems on this team is the positioning aspect, and Peyton is a victim just as much as anybody of doing that. And I don't have a good explanation, because obviously you see him in the open court dribbling the ball and he's one of the faster players on the team, then on the other end it doesn't show up, he gets passed up pretty often. So it is troubling, but I think one good thing to mention in this game too is Shaq Harrison continuing to be that spark plug. The offense is starting to worry me a little bit, but the defense is still there, and that's great to see.
Yeah, he had, right when he checked in, I think he had two instances. He had almost a steal, and he picked up a steal the next possession. So he's a guy I really hope they extend the rest of the season as far as his contract goes. He's currently on a second 10-day contract, as we mentioned in the last episode. But speaking of Peyton real quick, he's really in line, I imagine, to put up a 15-point, let's say, 8 rebounds, 8 assists line through his tenure as the Suns over his last couple months, because he's maintaining his assist numbers, maintaining his rebounding numbers. His points are going down consistently more with Booker being more aggressive than Jackson as well, but it'll probably, like I said, around be in the 15-point range. So if he's averaging those numbers over this last 20 or so games as a Sun, what does that do if you're Ryan McDonough? And do you think that maybe overprices him, hitting a market where teams needing point guards see a guy that left Orlando and then went to a new situation and did a lot better?
I think it'll help a lot. I mean, I think those NBA teams are smarter than to be able to fall into these pitfalls, but at the same time, it's been night and day in a lot of aspects with the change from before and after Peyton joined his team. And not only would a person just turning the Suns game on notice that in a big way if they had been watching this team prior to his acquisition, but they would also, you know, 2 triple-doubles. I mean, they lost both games, but that's pretty remarkable. That's not something every player can do, even on a bad, there's plenty of shots to go around. So I think that he is going to, you know, get a little bit of a better reputation. Although, you know, as we talked about with Philip on that episode right after we acquired, the knock has always been leading a winning basketball team, and he's surely not doing that right now either. So I guess maybe it hasn't changed too much, but I do think the flashiness might help his case there with the money he gets this summer.
I know it's hard to say how the market is going to be, because I think there's only going to be about 6 or 7 teams that might be aggressive or even have cap space in the first place. But what do you think if Peyton does put up those numbers and maintains what he's doing now, how much do you think he's going to get paid?
Yeah, I admire that Scott Bordeaux was willing to take a crack at the guess. He did like a little mini Twitter Q&A yesterday that people should check out, just kind of his thoughts about the team, which he doesn't share too often. And he said 4 years, 32. I have been, I mean, I maybe it's because it's the only contract that's been signed, is that Lou Williams extension, and he got about $8 million, which is just going to be just below the mid-level exception this summer with the way that it's projected to be. So I guess think Peyton might get a little bit more, but it's going to be a matter of years too, because he is young. So I could imagine that 4 years might be appealing to a team that is taking a chance on him. Their ability to grow him and turn him into a better player by the end of that deal might be appealing. And then maybe he's willing to take a little less per year if it's a longer security thing. So I think that could be around the range. Maybe I would say a little bit more money, maybe like 4 years, 40.
Yeah, I'd probably say around the 8 to 10 million range makes a lot of sense for Peyton. And like you mentioned there, I think he's going to value long-term security. So whoever gives him the long-term contracts, I think, might get Peyton this summer. So even though he is restricted, then that might play a factor in how McDonough values that. So it'll be something to obviously monitor moving forward. But speaking on a guy who had a really underrated performance today, and he had one of his better performances since his last time he faced the Hawks, was Marquese Chriss. He was plus 10 in 18 minutes. He put up 17 points, 5 rebounds, one assist, one steal, and 4 blocks in 18 minutes, like I mentioned. So a big game from Keith today, and that, I haven't said that often at all since 2018 started.
Yeah, he was. He looked really nice on defense tonight in a lot of different stretches. And again, you can tell we're back to a good Marquese Chriss game because he led the team in plus minus again out of nowhere. And I think that's a pretty telltale sign they're back to the same old Chriss that makes no sense at all. Yeah, he had two of those blocks in on one possession. He's just planted in front of the rim, would not let John Collins get a shot up. He eventually did on like his third or fourth attempt and knocked a little layup off the glass. But it's good to see him having that patient, focusing on rim protection, focusing spacing the floor, doing the little things that he is able to do even when he does struggle. And so obviously 0 fouls, pretty big for him too.
Yeah, I think they ran a couple times tonight. I think that he saw some extended minutes more than I've noticed the last couple of games. Him as a small ball center with Warren at the four, it looked actually pretty good at times when Chriss was engaged and stayed out of foul trouble.
Yeah, the Hawks are a good team to bet against because John Collins, who I mentioned, I mean, doesn't start at center for them, but plays quite a bit of center, and all their guys are more stretchy outside of Miles Plumlee. So while they do have size, it's not exactly the kind of matchup where you're worried about like a Al Horford type who's just going to slam you around, or Steven Adams, who we saw in the last game. So good for them to try that. And there was a lot of Chriss Bender, which we've seen over the last few games as well. That was good to see.
Yeah, I guess we saw the usual game from Dragan Bender. He filled up the stat sheet. He had 7 assists, I believe. He had 6 rebounds. But once again, he was very tentative as far as scoring goes, 6 points. Only took most of his shots from 3-point range. So that's a typical Bender game. And Jackson had a, albeit a quiet performance, but he looked a lot better. So I guess the guy I want to touch on between all these guys before we move on to our final discussion is Devin Booker. Yeah, I think with him, I don't know if I haven't seen him more often than you have, but since the last few years, but was that one of Booker's worst first halves ever put up? Because he had more turnovers, 5 than he did points.
Yeah, it was rough. It was surprising to see. And like you mentioned at the top, it was made TJ Warren's performance making really, really tough shots in that first half even more impressive, because it could have gotten out of hand in a hurry if he hadn't played, which was a question, and then also if he hadn't come alive like that. So luckily he had those guys to back him up, which hasn't been the case, but nice to see him come back in the second half, which is really just becoming kind of his MO at this point. I mean, regardless of how he performs in the first half, second half is pretty much golden for Booker these days.
Yeah, like I mentioned in my game recap, he was put in my bad category tonight, but I put an editor note at the end there. He, like usual, he went off in the fourth quarter and maintained their competitiveness at the end. So Booker finished with 20 points, as we mentioned. But as far as the takeaways from today's game, I think the main takeaway for me is, like you mentioned, TJ Warren. But I think for me, it goes to the draft positioning with how that loss went. The Suns nested at number 2 overall. The Hawks are number 5, so they drop back a little bit. And if this leads to, like I mentioned in my story today after the game, if this leads to DeAndre Ayton or Luka Doncic, if Torian Prince doesn't hit that 3, then that, I think that makes a huge difference the other way around coming a few months down the road. So I guess just what's your thoughts on the implications of this, of today's loss? And looking at today's schedule, they could even have a firmer lead on the number two spot in the draft if some chips fall their way.
Yeah, I was just going to go over that too, is Sacramento's playing New York, which is similar to Phoenix, Atlanta, in that anyone could win that game. So maybe the Kings catch one and then fall down the lottery standing. Same with Dallas and New Orleans. Obviously, the Pelicans have been on fire recently. The Suns got to see that firsthand, but not necessarily so different that you couldn't imagine Dallas winning winning that one. So, yeah, it's going to be just like the playoff standings are pretty important to watch every night. The lottery standings are becoming the same. So I could easily see that Torian Prince 3 becoming a highlight they play on lottery night, or that we all remember going into that Pong ballroom. So kind of a, like we were saying before we recorded, a perfect loss, even more than the Thunder because of the lottery implications.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's kind of poetic justice how they set Ken Bazemore today, and then they kind of ruined their tank job at the very end there. So it was kind of appealing to me. But any final takeaways from today's game that stood out from you, and anything you're looking forward to as far as the rest of the schedule goes? Because I know the Suns, they play in Miami tomorrow, and that might be the only time, if you're a Suns fan, you want to root for a win against the lottery standings, because that Miami pick would help them even further. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, the one, I'll just make one small point to kind of finish it off, is I briefly mentioned we talked about Shaq Harrison's on his second 10-day, and I would hope that he gets time the rest of the year with how well he's performed on defense. I just want to see more offense from him, so that's a small thing to watch, but interesting nevertheless with how the point guard situation has been so chaotic this year. If they could get some stability on a really cheap guy, that could be really good. So on the margins, that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that's a very good point you bring up there, Brandon. I'll wrap up today's episode. Appreciate you all listening. It's a rather quick episode, as it was just a recap of today's game. The Suns fall 113-112 the Atlanta Hawks. TJ Warren finished with 35 points. Marquese Chris had a solid outing, and Elfrid Payne recorded a second triple-double in 9 starts with the Phoenix Suns. So we'll be back with you guys tomorrow as the Suns play the Miami Heat.